Chapter 9, Simon. Feeling nauseous, Simon watched his feet as he power walked back to his apartment. He tramped up the metal exterior steps and, after slamming the door behind him, locked the deadbolt and chain. There was no way he was going to give Fox, that slimy, evil bastard, access to OMG. He did consider telling Kylie, but what would he say to her? "Hello, Kylie? A murderer is threatening to shoot my balls off if I don't give him OMG? And how would he explain how Fox even knew about the program?" He had to admit, there was something weird about Fox's insistence. It was almost as if Fox knew about it. And what would Fox even do with it if he got it? Simon didn't know, but it wouldn't be good. No, he would have to figure out something else. He sank into his desk chair, not even noticing the litter on his desk of old Starbucks cups, growing various degrees of mold and a smelly overflowing ashtray. Just across the room, crusty dishes were stacked in the galley kitchen sink and garnished with mouse droppings. Besides a boxy couch and a monster TV, it was otherwise a dark and barren apartment, except for his unmade bed, and the towels were strewn about the bathroom. Not that he cared, but he didn't see the squalor since he was focused on what displayed on his computer monitor, or both of them. Simon touched his wireless mouse and blinked both of his dual monitors awake, brightening the room and casting an eerie blue glow on his face. Before deleting Lily from his system, he put the file on a thumb drive, then wedged it under the inner sole of an old pair of sneakers. He then opened the login page for OMG. Oddly, he was unable to get into the program. Frowning into the screen, he tried it again. He had not changed his password. What the hell? He reached for the phone to call Kylie. Maybe she'd changed his login? He was pretty sure she wouldn't do that unless she was giving him a kiss-off. She had been acting weird lately, but he didn't think she'd just lock him out without a word. She probably wouldn't even know how to do it, he laughed to himself. Either way, what was the point? He laid his phone back on his desk with clammy hands. He tried to change his password but got an error. This program cannot be found. What the fuck? Simon opened his file manager, and the folder for OMG was there, but the only file it contained was the login screen. Had Fox gotten into his system and stolen the program? Did Fox think he was that much of a simpleton? No problem. This was totally up his alley. Simon could restore it. His stomach was jumping. He logged into the server for the backup, but OMG was missing from there, too. His forehead became damp with sweat. What was he going to tell Kylie? Now there was no reason to meet Fox. There was only reason to run. He checked the server's log to see who had logged in and when did they do it. It showed a new IP address logging in just a half hour before. He didn't recognize the address. He quickly ran a search and found out it belonged to Misha Kublaski. Who the hell was that? A flunky for Fox? A hacker? Simon was so screwed. If only he had OMG, he could run a report on Kublaski. Without his tools, he simply Googled the name, discovering Kublaski was an encryption expert. Simon shut down his computer and got an electric drill from his toolbox in the closet. After blasting down into the guts of his hard drive, he threw the drill on the floor and pulled his duffel bag from his closet. He tossed on some clothes, a few toiletries, his laptop, his passport, and the sneakers with the hidden thumb drive before locking his door and heading to the subway. Well, at the airport, he bought a one-way ticket to San Francisco on a 4 p.m. flight. He didn't know what he was going to do, except to get as far away from Fox as possible. Once Simon went through the airport security that afternoon, he settled in at a restaurant with a beer. He considered calling Kylie, but imagined how the conversation would go. "So, hey, it's me. I just wanted to tell you someone has stolen OMG. Forget that. Simon drained his beer and paid his bill. Walking past a mirror in the men's room, he was startled by his white face with circles under his dark eyes. But then he lumbered down to the gate where he would start a new life once he landed. At 4 o'clock, Fox sat down on one of the benches by the Civil War statue on the Boston Common. Except for a few Asian tourists shooting photos in the fading light, he was alone. The statue was on top of a hill, and with the bare trees, he had a view of the entire park. Like a bird hunting prey, Fox paced in circles around the monument, scanning the paths below for Simon. The clouds had moved in, adding a dreary gloom to the November landscape. In an hour, it would be dark, and the jewel-toned Christmas lights looping around the tops of the trees below would come on. He waited 15 minutes, surveying the practically deserted sidewalks below, before taking out his phone and texting to Simon. "Where the hell are you?" Well, somewhere over Michigan, Simon heard the ding of a text coming in. It had probably been a mistake to connect to the plane's Wi-Fi. Dreading what he would find, Simon pulled his phone out from the seat pocket in front of him. Fox's name flashed on his screen, canceling out the tiny bit of beer-induced calm he'd been enjoying. Simon sucked in his breath and read Fox's message and texted back. "Don't play games with me. I know you stole the program. You're not going to get away with this." Simon turned off his phone and slipped it back into the seat pocket. He ordered a beer from the stewardess. When it arrived, he gulped it down and selected a movie, but instead, he fell into a restless sleep for the rest of the flight to San Francisco. Fox was furious. "How dare Simon play me?" Checking his list of contacts, he found Simon's address a mere 10-minute walk from the common. He fingered his gun in his pocket as he walked across the park down Tremont Street, past the now dark and forlorn theaters, some seedy hotels, and onto the South End, where he turned onto Simon Street. He rushed past the desolate community gardens to the apartment complex just across the street. It was in a group of shabby three-story flats looking like they'd been built in the 60s. Well, compared to the old brownstones only a block away in the South End, it was relatively new, but had seen better days. Fox's heavy footsteps had a hollow sound as he climbed the exterior steps to Simon's third-floor unit. He pounded on the flimsy wooden door. "Simon!" No answer. "Whitehead! Open up, you fucking little rat!" Met with silence. Fox removed a tiny blowtorch from his pocket. He flipped it open and fired it up. Using a torch was a trick he learned in college when his girlfriend locked him out and a supposed no-fail paperclip trick failed. He went out and bought the tiny torch and kept it tucked in his bag ever since. It had more than paid for itself over the years. Well, Fox pulled a dummy key out of a pouch, and once it melted, he inserted it into the keyhole. As it cooled, it molded to the correct shape. He now easily unlocked Simon's door. Piece of cake. Inside, he switched on the lights, revealing the dirty dishes and disarray on his desk. His nostrils curled in distaste from the acrid smell of stale cigarettes. God, why couldn't people take care of their bodies? Well, then he noticed the hard drive with its fatal incision to its innards and its murder weapon, the drill, still laying on the floor. He hovered his hand over the top of the computer, feeling its warmth as if it were a body that had just expired. Fox searched the apartment for anything that might have the program. There were still a few clothes in the closet, but not much else. He searched the cupboards, which were practically bare, except for a few dishes, a half-empty box of Pop-Tarts, and some packaged macaroni dinners. The refrigerator contained a few bottles of beer, a bag of apples, and a jar of crunchy peanut butter. The kid had flown. What had he expected? Fox wiped off his fingerprints with a small chamois from his pocket and left, closing the door quietly behind him. He would find Whitehead, get the program, and then have him killed. He took out his phone and speed-dialed Alex, his right-hand man who had connections everywhere. Even on a Sunday, when he was undoubtedly watching football, Alex picked up on the first ring. Good man. Fox explained how he was looking for Simon, who might be traveling, and could Alex use his police connections to check flights? By the time Fox's phone rang a half hour later, he was nursing a beer and watching the Patriots game at Salvatore's Bar on Washington Street, just off the Boston Common. Learning Simon was on a flight to San Francisco, Fox told Alex to arrange a greeting committee for Simon when he landed. Fox was explicit about Simon's fate. It was dark when Simon landed at the San Francisco airport. He had planned to get a hotel room and then figure out what to do next. He swung his duffel over his shoulder and headed through baggage claim, where just outside he would get a taxi. As he held the door for two men behind him, one of them suddenly moved in close enough for Simon to get a strong smell of his cloying cologne mixed with pot. He encircled Simon with a bear hug that felt like a wrestling hold. Simon struggled to break away, but the man held him firm, and Simon apparently wasn't going anywhere. The man now crushing him was a head taller and much stronger. Simon's face only came up to his attacker's chest, and it was smashed against his black leather jacket reeking of pot. "Hey, man, great to see you, Simon. We're really glad you made it. Welcome to San Francisco, bro." The second man continued, "Yeah, really good of you to come all the way to the West Coast for a visit. Our buddy Jerry Fox said we ought to take good care of you." The second man was closer to Simon's age and size. He inched close enough to point the hard nose of a gun into Simon's back ribs and whispered, "We've arranged transportation for you. I suggest you don't make any noise. Just get into the car like a good little nerd. We wouldn't want a scene where you might get hurt." Sandwiched between the two men, who had clamped their arms around his shoulders, Simon was led to a silver Mercedes SUV. "Your carriage awaits," said the gun guy, bowing slightly. "Get in." Simon obeyed. Gun guy slid in the back seat next to Simon. "Buckle up, my little nerd boy. We wouldn't want anything to happen to you." Terrified, Simon complied. The hugger sat in the front seat with the driver, who had on a backward Giants cap, but did not turn around. When the doors were slammed shut, he drove out of the airport and turned south onto Route 101. No one spoke for an hour as they drove through the darkness. They finally turned off at the Gilroy exit. Simon had only been to San Francisco once and frantically watched the road signs as they drove south, passing Palo Alto, Mountain View, Santa Clara, and beyond. But once past San Jose, he no longer recognized the names on the signs. His stomach churned, bubbling a new brew of acid that kept threatening to come up. Finally, the driver pulled off to the side of the road next to a field. "We're here, bro," said Simon's seatmate. "Just to make sure you don't try anything creative, I want you to wear a little jewelry. It's not much, but just a token of our esteem." He pulled silver handcuffs from his pocket and locked them on Simon's wrists. Hugging guy in the front seat opened his door, got out, and stretched his long arms in the cool air and yawned. "Nice night," he said before opening Simon's door and hauling him onto the field. "Hey, you know what kind of field this is, kid?" Simon stumbled in some dirt and then regained his balance. "No." His throat felt so tight his voice was barely audible. He frantically looked for some way to escape. "It's garlic and it stinks just like you. Did you know Gilroy is the garlic capital of the world?" "No!" Simon tried to kick his shins and bite his arm, but Hugging Guy held him at a distance with one hand, as if he were an adult restraining a child. "I didn't think so. I suggest you settle down, cowboy. You know our buddy in Boston tells me you owe him some information. He wants it, and evidently knows what to do with it, so I suggest you play nice and give it to us, or we'll leave you here to fertilize the garlic."
Simon looked him in the eye. "So I know you aren't going to believe me, but someone hacked my computer. The program is gone. I have no way to get it." Simon thrashed unsuccessfully, trying to elbow him and butt him with his head. It was useless. He was being held by a giant.
"Yeah, you were the kid who told the teacher the dog ate your homework, am I right?" he laughed. "Yeah, you were. You totally were. I know your type." He shoved Simon for emphasis. Before Simon could answer, the guy with the gun aimed it directly at Simon.
Would you like to rethink your answer, nerd boy?
Simon leaned over and vomited on his shoe. He wished it had gone onto the guy's face. Gagging, he held his elbows up and wiped his mouth on his jacket sleeve.
I can't, because it's the honest truth. I can't give you what I don't have.
His mouth reeked from his own acids.
The hugging guy smiled. Yeah? Let's see what you've got in your bag. He pulled open the car door and rummaged through Simon's duffel in the back seat. He opened the laptop and looked through the files.
Hey, what did you do with those programs, asshole?
He called over his shoulder.
I'm telling you, my computer got hacked. It's the truth.
Simon's throat was now so constricted his words came out only as a low whisper.
Hugging Guy walked from the car over to Simon. What was that? You want to rethink that? I hear they need more fertilizer here, you piece of shit. Maybe you need a little motivation. He punched Simon's stomach hard. Simon stumbled backward from its velocity and the pain, sobbing as he staggered.
I don't have it!
He wasn't ready to die. This was not fair. His mouth was dry, but he gathered up his saliva and shot it through the air to land on Gun Guy's face. Gun Guy looked mad as he wiped his face with his sleeve.
Okay, I've had it. That was really bad manners. Maybe you do that in Boston, but here, In California, we have manners. Didn't anyone tell you it's not nice to spit? You've used up your chances, said his friend.
Gun Guy raised his arm out straight and shot Simon in the chest. As Simon slumped onto the field, the condensation from his blood rose like a cloud of fog in front of the headlights. The air reeked from gunpowder and added an eerie yellow glow.
Gun Guy then held his hand out for the handcuff key, and when he got it, he released Simon's wrists. He rolled Simon over, and without noticing Simon's face with eyes round with terror, he removed the wallet from Simon's jeans and stuffed it in his jacket pocket.
Let's go, he said, patting his pocket. It stinks here.